Hi, nice to meet you. Chris.
Nice to meet you.
Cindy. Cindy's going to rock the boat.
Oh,
she's going to show us what's up.
I have to leave at like 6:40. So
which is fine. Well, gives us a reason to not have this do 2 hours.
Yeah.
Good.
Run, so.
We can always use one of those.
We always just chum up for a bit where we can we can start.
Wait, can I get a picture of me in here? Right.
Yes.
I'm excited about it.
Yeah. Nothing but surprises here on Confessions of a Game Dev.
Yeah.
So, well, welcome to Confessions of a Game Dev podcast. Today we are joined with. Wait, dang it! I totally did this last time. I did it again.
We are joined with.
We are joined by. Wait, was it?
With our powers combined.
With our powers combined, we made Captain Planet. I don't know. We have a special guest today. So Spencer Buchanan is here. That's me talking, or not talking, succinctly. Everyone introduce yourselves. Karate.
I'm here.
Karate's here. We've got Christian Munoz. I did it. Did I do it right? One day I'll be able to say it with the alacrity of a Hispanic. Or not. A Latino. Excuse Dang it. See, this is why we needed Cindy. We need Cindy.
Thank you. It's the first time somebody else says that. Yes.
Is it? So you're not allowed to say
I don't like that word either.
Okay. Well, I didn't know.
Which
like
one?
Hispanic.
Well, Ashley, introduce yourself real quick.
I'm Ashley. I'm still sick.
She's still sick.
Oh, no.
In close.
I know.
And today visiting us is Cindy Nguyen. Is that right?
Yes.
Yes, I said the name right. I look at that name and I get intimidated. I'm like, I'm so saying that last name wrong. But I did it right finally. So Cindy, we're excited because she is, you want to introduce yourself?
Sure.
Okay.
I'm Cindy. I'm an instructor in gender studies.
Very cool.
And a PhD student, third year in ECS. So I am in the dissertation phase right now.
Awesome. Hold on. No one say anything for a second. I'm going to make this really noisy drum so we can get your voice better. Okay. So, cool. So what does that mean? Like, what are you doing in that space?
I teach gender and contemporary issues. So it's 3690. Basically kind of looking at things like employment, education, sexism, racism, all those intersections within the U.S. context,
okay.
And sometimes in global context as well. And then in ECS, I teach multicultural ed. I'll be teaching that, or TAing it next year, and have my own section, and multicultural. I'm sure you guys know what that is, multiculturalism.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of look at diversity issues, what that means in terms of schooling, language acquisition, cultural competency, so forth. And then in terms of my research, I'm hesitant to call it an expertise, but my research looks at urban ed policy, teen pregnancy, sexuality, race, gender, and then kind of my side work that I do in terms of conferences and stuff is like Asian American feminisms, pedagogies, and epistemologies.
So what are you doing in your spare time?
I have a life outside of school and academics. Do you really want me to answer that?
That was quite a lot of work.
That was
it makes me sound smarter than I am, you know.
So we brought Cindy on, and I talked to her this last week before we brought her on, just to make sure that she's up to par with issues that we've talked about just recently with Anna Sarkeesian and the Trouse versus Women in video games, but also just ongoing issues with gender in video games as it's wont to be, because we're so forefront in media. And kind of I guess my biggest hope was, how do we figure this out? Like, what can we do? What do we as game developers, we as people that are producing content in this game, in this media space, what can we do to better that discussion of gender equality or race equality or whatever that equality discussion? I don't know. What do you call it?
I think it's equality and equity, but I think I mean, to have a discussion is one thing, right? Okay. To actually implement that discussion is a whole nother thing. And I think it's important that, in terms of thinking of that, you know, for you and I to have a dialogue, I think is great, but are you going to implement that in terms of your game development, right? Does mm-hmm. it go beyond this red box that we're in, right?
Yes.
And so I think that that's the number one thing. Is that your intent? Is that your purpose? Are you interested in that? Does that even matter? Or are you just doing it because you feel like it's a novelty? Right. And so I don't want you to say, well, I'm a good white person doing this. Right. I tell my students it has to be something that's genuine, because within being genuine comes that change. Right. I think it's just a matter of being critical. What does or what do video games look like nowadays? And why do you think it's an issue? Right. For you to identify the issue then allows you to identify what you want to do in terms of changing it. I for sure know, I don't play video games, you know, being that I don't have much spare time. I don't play video games, but I do know, you know, in terms of media and popular culture, who someone who consumes that recognizes that, yes, women are absolutely sexualized, right? And that is a problem in many ways because it perpetuates things like rape culture, for example. But then not only are they sexualized, they're also racialized, right? So certain features, like maybe the sexier one is Asian, for example, and that just kind of buys into these stereotypes that we already have. Do I think it's possible for game developers to make that change? Absolutely. You know, like the conversation we had yesterday. Could you bring on someone that's quote-unquote an expert? Could you develop a character that maybe looks different than the status quo, right?
And that actually really, since we talked last, I was really excited about that notion of, like, I say what goes. You know, mm-hmm. I get to say what goes at any given time, and I'm so used to it. It's like, well, I need the brainy character, so let's get the, you know, a guy with a really big head and glasses, because obviously that means, and then if I want to be really racially inoffensive, I could add that he's Asian or something like that. And you and I talked about that. That's why I'm mentioning that. I'm not trying to be insensitive, but you know, and then you said, well, why does it have to be that? And it's so funny how, I guess sometimes we get stuck in the trenches that I don't go, oh yeah, I guess I could have just made him any old color or no color.
Exactly.
You know, but I actually had an experience today where I was talking with some other developers, and we were saying, well, we should have it this way because this is a girl character, and we should have it this way because this is a boy character. And I'm like, or we could decide. I mean, like, we're big enough in this space that should we be able to demand what that means to be the girl character and mm-hmm, the boy character?
Absolutely. I think gender is really constructed, and we don't often recognize that. Like, it's not that I was born liking pink by any means, right? Mm-hmm. And society is telling me that pink is a color that makes me feminine, that makes me a real woman, right? So it's super constructed. The same thing, like, masculinity, when you think about that, that's muscles, a deep voice, facial hair, and so forth. So if someone has longer hair, he's seen as maybe not as masculine, right? So gender becomes really constructed, and video games plays into that construction of what? Well, we need this hero. So what does a hero look like? He has muscles, he's, like, nicely tan, right? He has a certain type of hair, a certain type of style, right? So as video game developers, you can change that. It can be ambiguous in many ways, right? Mm. She could be the girl character, but expand what it means to be a girl, the definition, right? Does it have to be a box, or can it be a circle, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or could it be a different shape, right? So she doesn't necessarily have to fit these traditional notions of what it means to be a girl in terms of when you're developing the game. And then, you know, your intent behind it as well. Like, girls who are playing your video games probably don't like pink, probably don't put bows in their hair and so forth, right? So again, what does it mean to be a girl?
Yeah.
And how can you change that?
Tell everyone else the story that you told me yesterday of how you start a semester off. I thought that was really funny. But cool. Very, very interesting. When you sit in the audience when the class starts.
What does that have to do with this, though?
Well, no, I'm hoping that it does at some point, because I think it's very interesting for the whole discussion.
For sure. So when I start a class, I generally sit in the audience. And I don't look like your typical professor, which I know. And my students always freak out when I, you know, everyone's in class, it's about time to start. And I'm like, hi, everyone. You know, I'm Cindy. And everyone's like, why is this girl talking? And then I'm like, I'm the professor of this class. I'm the instructor of this class. And everyone's like, what? Like, for real? Like, is this 18-year-old girl the instructor, right? So there's this idea of, one, what does a professor look like, right? He doesn't look like me. Right? How does a professor speak? Doesn't speak like me. Does a professor have tattoos? No, not traditionally. You know, does he or she dress in ways that I do? No, not really, right? So again, I'm changing the idea of what it means to be smart, right? I'm changing the idea of what it means to be a professor, right, to be highly educated. A lot of people always tell me, you don't look highly educated. I'm like, fuck you, I am. It doesn't matter what I look like, right? My brain is what it is, yeah, right? So again, right, that I'm changing the idea of what it means, and I'm pushing those boundaries, right? In my teaching evals, a student wrote to me, you need to dress more modestly. Right. And for me, it's like, you know, how I dress has really nothing to do with how I teach. If you learn something in my class, right, I did my job, regardless of what the fuck I had on.
Yeah.
And so again, it's the idea of changing what it means to be an instructor, to be highly educated, especially when you are typically and traditionally marginalized from the space, right? Mm. So we know that women of color are not typically professors, right? Girls are not typically heroes in video games. So can we change that? And are we changing that, right? That's my duty as much as it's your duty, right, as a game developer.
Cool. And I guess the other thing is, at least for me, which is the straight white male guy,
mm-hmm.
I've been hearing a lot about privilege, and I just want to rehash the conversation we had, which is understanding, I guess what privilege is,
uh-huh.
and understanding it so that everyone can understand that.
Sure.
Principle.
So white privilege, you know, there's a seminal article that came out by Peggy McIntosh where she's a white woman. She talks a lot about her unearned benefits, right?
Mm.
So white privilege is not your fault, right? It's not your fault you're a straight man, white man at that, but it is unearned benefits that you receive. So if I were to walk in a store versus you, I guarantee you I'd be followed more than you, right? Because it's the idea that someone with darker skin, someone who is not white, someone with tattoos is probably more likely to steal than someone who is white, for example, right? A white person is often seen as good, right? Often seen as smart, often seen as middle class, has a stable home, whereas people of color, certain households, like if you think about black men, how are they racialized? They're racialized as criminals, they're racialized as uneducated, they're racialized as poor, right? So your benefit to have just your white skin means you can walk into certain spaces and be safe, right? Walk into certain spaces and shop as you'd like. Buy Band-Aids and know that they're going to reflect your skin color but not reflect mine. Or Chris, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or Chris's, right? So Band-Aids, that's white privilege as well. Or
I've never thought of that.
Or if you get a job, for example, right? You're going to think that you got the job because you earned it. But if I got the job, people are going to say, she probably got it because they needed diversity quotas, right? Same thing with Chris, for example. If he got a job, they're going to be like, they needed more Latinos, so they hired him, right? The same thing with my program. I'm one of the only Asian Americans in the program. People could easily say, she got into the program because they needed more Asians, right? Mm-hmm. But I could say, that gets questioned because I don't have the same privilege as you. But if you got into the program, people would be like, you know, he did well in school. He's really intelligent. He writes well and so forth. So for me, it's based upon my race and maybe based upon my gender. But for you, it's just based upon your merit. So you see, white privilege is these unearned benefits that you receive. Right, that other people don't get, and that it's not meant for you to feel guilty about, right? And it's not like you say, well, fine, I give it up. Because you could give up your privilege, but somebody else is still going to give you those benefits, right?
Yeah.
Society still gives you those benefits. But you can be an ally to people of color and recognize, like, okay, well, let's try to advocate for someone else to make our program more diverse and more of a welcoming space for someone that is not white, for example, right? Same thing with me teaching. Right, I teach my students to learn about their privilege so that they recognize no matter where they go in the world, no matter where they work, they will be able to be advocates and allies to people of color and recognize that we need to work together in order for us to enact some sort of change.
And so I guess that's the next step is, all right, I don't purport to say that I understand privilege. I think I have a glimpse of it.
Of course.
But what do I do with that? Like, how do I, as that person, and I guess one of the reasons why I'm asking this question is I feel like this industry is male-dominated.
Absolutely.
It's hard to say that it isn't.
Everything is, for the most part, male-dominated, right? This patriarchy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But so what do we do? How do we be better at this and be able to be part of the discussion, I guess?
Absolutely. And I think right now, the fact that you invited me to this space, right, I think is huge for someone who is not a game developer to be in this space and to have this dialogue, I think is wonderful, right? So when I have students who are like engineering students who take my class, like I think that's a beautiful thing, right? So this dialogue to create that space and to be open to it, I think is number one, right? Not to be defensive about it, not to be offended by it, but to be able to be open to it is huge. In terms of what can you do with your privilege, like I think it's a very privileged statement for you to ask me as a person of color what you're supposed to do with it, right? Mm. You have to figure that out. You have to come to terms with your privilege and recognize, you know, that you have a duty in some way. My suggestion would be, you know, changing, if you become a game developer, changing what games look like, encouraging your supervisors to be more open to diversifying the workforce, for example, or your field, whatever the case, right? But those are some suggestions. But at the same time, it's something that you have to learn to grapple with. Like you said, you think you get it, but you don't think that you get it. Read about it. you know, continue to have dialogues with it, with people beyond me about it, you know, educate yourself in terms of what that means. And then it also looks different for each person. So what it means, you know, for you could not be the same as what it means for, like, Bill Clinton, for example, right?
Yeah.
All that stuff means it's different based upon your experiences as well and where you exist, right? You don't really have to come to terms that much with your white privilege here in Utah because Utah is majority white,
yeah.
Right? So no one's really going to have, you know, that type of dialogue, right? So that's why when I teach about it, I have, it's such a contentious space because students are like, what the fuck are you talking about, right?
Hmm.
Like, I'm changing what they've learned all through their K through 12. But in California, it might be a little bit different because it's much more diverse, right?
It's very different.
Yeah, very different. And then it's not a conservative state, right? The climate is a little different. It's not a religious state,
mm-hmm.
for example, right? So that's, you know, depending on, it means something else depending on the context and space. But regardless of the fact, it is important for you to acknowledge and for you to work with.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Cool. Any other questions you guys have? I've got more. I just wanted to let this have a discussion.
I wasn't fully prepared for this one.
Yeah,
for sure. I'm not either. You know, I've never prepared for this stuff.
None of us are.
Yeah, and that's okay.
Well, actually, no, I did have a question, I guess. This is more, you see, you don't really play games. A lot of the choices that are made, especially in these the games that people refer to as sexist or these things,
mm-hmm.
they're larger AAA titles, for the most part. Most indie games don't generally fall into that.
Probably not.
Kind of thing, right? So they're very big budget titles.
Mm-hmm.
And alongside, like, large-scale entertainment, you know, summer blockbusters and those kind of things, mm-hmm. they all seem to fall into the same trope. You find that it's do you find that it's more of a reflection of our culture at large?
Absolutely.
Or
I don't think it's not created in a vacuum.
Yeah.
Like, the video game industry is not, does not create games just in a vacuum. It's always contextualized, you know,
yeah.
And I always speak to people about how, you know, it's not a coincidence that, you know, white men run this country. Like, there's context behind it, historical context behind it. So I think that the video game industry, as well as popular culture, you know, movies, music, hip-hop, for example, is reflective of our culture,
yeah.
By all means. You know, of how we are very patriarchal, by how we are, you know, we privilege certain races over others, you know, and how class differences and all that, right? It's all consequences and implications of this paradigm that we exist in. So for sure.
Awesome.
I guess as a follow-up, okay, this may be the wrong question to ask, but... Sorry, Ash.
I got class! It was great to listen to.
What do you call it? I don't know if this is an appropriate question to ask, but as far as affirmative action, what are your thoughts on it? I mean, I'm sure you have many thoughts on it, but just
of course. You know, I know a lot of people have issues with affirmative action, but I always tell my students, you know, when they talk about how, well, it's unfair that you're going to hire this, you know, Asian person because there's no diversity, right? But we wouldn't have to enact affirmative action if we weren't excluded in the first place.
Sure.
If there wasn't an issue of a lack of diversity in the first place. So affirmative action was A, saying we recognize that people have been historically and politically excluded.
Mm-hmm.
And because we've been politically and historically excluded, what can be done, right? So I'm not saying affirmative action was the best solution, but I'm saying that it was in place of, well, we know that all schools have white people in them, or the majority white people, right? And that's an issue because why? It's not like there aren't smart people of color, but there's because, you know, housing, because of policy, because of economics, because of slavery, because of immigration, right? All those factors play into why schools have majority white people, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And why white people are typically CEOs and so forth, right? And so affirmative action was put into place to say, we need more people of color in these spaces because they've been purposely, not coincidentally, but purposely excluded,
yeah.
Right? And so that's my take on affirmative action,
okay.
Right? And, you know, I think, again, it goes back to this idea of white privilege where people say, you know, if Spencer got a job versus me, it's based upon his merit. It has nothing to do with his race. It has nothing to do with, you know, his religion or anything. But for me as a woman, it's always like, did it have something to do with my looks? Did it have something to do with me being Asian? Did it have something to do with the fact that I am X, Y, or Z, right? It always has to go back to these social characteristics, but it doesn't when you're white.
Sure.
Right? And also affirmative action, historically, studies show who did they benefit? Affirmative action benefited white women, so it really wasn't even effective in terms of placing people of color into certain spaces.
So it helped that diversity of men and women.
It helped in terms of gender, but it didn't help in terms of race, okay. In terms of class, in terms of culture, right? And so people always want to talk shit about affirmative action, especially, I mean, I'm not saying y'all are, but in terms of, like, many very conservative white folks are so against affirmative action, right? But then they don't read up on the study. They don't read up on the context. Like, why is this even in place? And who the hell did it benefit in the first place, right? And yeah. It was white women. So we're still excluded in many ways.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Well,
that was something I noticed even we went down to a conference last week. Mm-hmm. Was down in San Francisco.
Yeah, I'm from
You know what GDC is. Okay, awesome.
Well, I'm from the Bay, actually. But I don't know if I know about the Game Developers Conference. Oh, it's
a big Game Developers Conference. Uh-huh. Everybody goes down. But I was amazed at the number of... It's mostly white. Mm-hmm. Mostly white, mostly male.
Very much.
And it surprised me. I grew up in California. Uh-huh. You know, like, I mean... Very diverse neighborhood. That was when I grew up, and I moved to Utah, and I just kind of was blown away that it's all white. Right? And when I went over there, I was just surprised at how just single dimensional most everything was. Uh-huh. And white and Asian, I guess that's the two, because you know you have Japanese culture coming from from video games. And I don't know if I have a question. Really. It was just kind of an interesting dynamic, even in such a global industry, we're still so...
Not global?
Yeah, it is. Well, it's interesting. Like, I mean, when I went to the writing club, we did a competition, mm-hmm. and one of the four finalists was this black guy. His name was OJ. Mm-hmm. He was awesome, okay? And he was really cool, but he's the only black guy I saw all week.
Yeah.
Like, who was in the conference. Like I said, you know, some people in San Francisco is mm-hmm. very diverse there, but, like, I was just like, are we being exclusionary? Is that a word?
Exclusive. Yeah.
Or is it just because, you know, or is there another reason?
I think that there's a lot of reasons. Yeah. In terms of it. And I think, you know, to say broadly that there were white and then Asian, I think you also need to be specific in terms of what type of Asian folks are there, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't Pacific Islanders. It wasn't Southeast Asian folks. It was East Asian folks, right? And that's not coincidental either, because East Asian folks, like Korean and Japanese, for example, gaming is huge in those, mm-hmm. in those, countries, right? But also they're considered first world countries. Right, where Southeast Asia is considered a third world country, right? So it's no more for like sweatshops than it is for its gaming industry, for example. Right? And it has to do with immigration. So immigration is tied to why many East Asian folks are highly educated, and within these very professional fields, right? Immigration, they immigrated over in like 1800s, right? So they've been here for generations versus like my family got here in the 1980s, right? So our legacy is I'm the second generation, right? Whereas people are like fourth or fifth generation, right? So then again, that's why they are maybe more middle class. That's why they are more educated. That's why they're more in these professional industries, right?
Yeah.
So that's not coincidental in terms of that. And in terms of being exclusive, like when we think about black communities, like what are they encouraged to do? Sports, right? Yeah. They're encouraged to do sports, right? So everybody who says, do well in a sport, you'll get a scholarship to school, but it's never, you're smart enough to get a scholarship beyond your athletic ability, right? Mm. So it's also, how are we constructing these communities, right? And our educators have these stereotypes, and then they are encouraging our students for this, that, or whatever, right? Yeah. Or pigeonholing them based upon this, right? Like an Asian student, for example, like, I'm always thought to be great at math. And I'm not by any means, right? And I always say, I'm no shit about, like, engineering. I'm no shit about math, right? But I'm a really good writer, which is not typical, right? And so I think that we have to recognize, too, culturally what it is, but also how they're being schooled, how they're being taught, and then the communities, right? When you're in an impoverished community, right, computers and these types of luxuries aren't accessible, right? Mm-hmm. And so they might not be able to play video games or maybe not even see video games in a lifetime because that's something that more middle-class people have the ability to afford, right? So it all goes into class. It goes all into race and stuff. So.
I can see that, too. I mean, like, when I'm in Hawaii, like, mm-hmm. that's, my family's from Hawaii.
Okay.
And so, but it is very, you go play football, get a scholarship, get out of here.
Yeah.
And but there's really little else of it as far as motivation is concerned to, mm-hmm. you know, progress and move yourself. So I do understand, I guess I see that.
And there's a lineage and there's a legacy of poverty, right? When you're caught in a cycle of poverty, everyone says, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. But many of these communities don't have bootstraps, right? And it's not this individualized meritocratic thing. Yeah. It's like, well, I'm caught in a cycle of poverty. Like, if I can't afford to go to college, how the hell am I supposed to go, right? Yeah. And then if I don't go to college, right, and then I have children, how am I going to be able to get a good job for my children to go to school?
Right.
Right. So people try to use athletics in many ways to break that cycle of poverty. But again, it's so limited. Like when you're caught in that cycle of poverty, like all of these systemic issues get in your way that you can't pull yourself up by your bootstraps because you don't have any.
Right.
Right. And so I think that it's important for us to recognize all of the contextual pieces that go into why your industry looks the way that it does.
Yeah. So I'm trying to remember one of the things that we were talking about the other day, which was, I totally forgot it, but it was, I'll see if I can get back to it. Did you have anything? Christian, did you want to say anything?
No, this conversation just takes me back to my freshman year in college. Because, like, I got a full-ride scholarship for my undergrad.
Uh-huh. Where'd you go?
I got the Utah Opportunity Scholarship.
Did you go here?
Uh-huh.
Okay, where?
Yeah, so actually, and part of that scholarship was that I had to take, classes that deal with this stuff. So, I don't know, that it was very eye-opening for me my freshman year. So this is, like, taking me back.
And that says so much about our education system, right? You don't get to learn about ethnic studies, and you don't get to learn about people that look like you until you get into college.
Yeah.
Right. So for people, you know, for like you and I, it's like, oh my God, it's an eye opening experience. But for you guys, in terms of your white privilege, your curriculum, your schooling curriculum looks just like you. Right. You're learning about white men. It's a very Eurocentric thing.
Yeah.
So you're learning about what it means to be a good American. You're learning about what it means to be a good man. And your examples are, you know, white men in your curriculum. Whereas, like, you know, we have to wait till Asian American History Month for me to learn maybe something about an Asian American person, right? We have to learn about, like, Cesar Chavez, even celebrate something that has to do with Latino culture, right? And then Black History Month, like, we only get to see black faces when it's Black History Month, right? Mm-hmm. But then every other month, it belongs to this white Eurocentric culture, right? So again, that plays into why industries look the way that they do, et cetera, et cetera.
And what's interesting, like, I realize this is a false statement now, but I've heard it before, and I kind of felt it in the past, which is, well, blacks get their month, and Asians get their month. How come the white guys don't get their month?
Because you have every other month.
Right. And, like, now I know that answer. Now I understand that. But for the longest time, I was just like, well, gosh, how come there's no, rights group for middle-aged overweight guys? Because, gosh, it's called American industry, right?
Yeah,
you know,
it's
called Gold's Gym.
And it's like you have, you know, the most part, like, widely celebrated holidays are white Christian holidays.
Yeah.
Like, period, right? Like, Easter and Christmas and so forth, right? So it's not even about having a month, but, like, you have institutions, right? Everything from the university to K-12 education through politics. Like, if you look in the Capitol here at Utah, like, what does it look like? Right?
Yeah.
It's old crusty white men. Right? Period.
I love how you validate that with crusty. She said the exact same phrase. I'm like, oh, not just old and white.
Yes. Yeah,
they
so
gotta be,
like,
crusty too.
Exactly. And so for us to recognize, like, it's not just, you know, we get a month that's exciting or we get a holiday, but, like, to recognize that whiteness, and by whiteness I don't mean white people, but whiteness as an institution is everywhere.
Mm.
Right? Everywhere. Whether it be in media, right? What is the definition of beautiful? My brown eyes aren't necessarily the definition of beautiful. Blue eyes are, right? Mm. My hair is not. The color of my skin is not, right? The eye shape that I have is not considered the ideal eye shape, right? And so beauty, right? Popular culture, video games, schooling, politics, all of that is dominated by this whiteness,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's what I'm saying in terms of game development, how you can disrupt that.
Yeah.
And you can in many ways, right? Are there limitations? Sure, right? I wouldn't argue that there aren't, but I think that it is possible.
So Karate asked me after I talked with you, because he was going to come and talk with you and I, and he had something to do, but he's like, how, you know, what do you think? And I said, I feel so empowered right now. Like, that's literally how I felt after I left mm-hmm. our lunch, which was like, dude, I could do this, you know, and it definitely, you know, feels like, well, yeah, okay, I guess I'm at the point where I understand privilege to where I need to do something with it, but I just, you know, for quite a few times I go, I'm just yet another white dude.
But then I could easily say that in terms of, okay, well, I'm just this lowly gender studies instructor, excuse me,
yeah.
at the University of Utah, like, what the fuck can I do, right? I'm just this lowly graduate student, underpaid, overworked,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But then that's not my attitude when I go into the classroom, right? I have students who I know don't like me, but that doesn't mean I don't show up every day and give it my best,
yeah.
right?
Well, and let me just tell you, that, like, that's how I felt in the past, but after talking with you yesterday, I'm like, I can make a difference. I can do something, you know, and I'm not sure exactly what it is, but you obviously gave me that raw emotion or that raw motivation. It's like, okay, mm-hmm. I'm getting this. And so
we have to like have these moments of crisis, right? I always tell my students, like, you have to be uncomfortable in my class. If I made you feel uncomfortable, that's perfect. You have to hate me sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. In this class, you have to also love me sometimes, because these moments of crisis when you don't know what the fuck is going on is when you can actually enact and feel this raw emotion to where you want to create and transform something. Cool. Right, so I tell my students, like, as much as you hate me or love me, or you can't decide on how you feel about me, right? That's good. I want you to be like, so that you can be like, yes, this is how I'm going to move forward, yeah. Right? And I think that's important to recognize those emotions.
Well, and I like how you've mentioned the word intent a lot. Mm-hmm. That, you know, everything has to be. I guess even if I'm going to play stereotypes in my game, I have to be intentional on those stereotypes if I really absolutely need to.
But I think you never really need to.
Yeah, but right. But it's like, if I'm going to put it in there, I need to at least be intentional. Because if I should be able to, I should
be
expect someone to say.
Be responsible and accountable
That's the word you have.
Right,
that's the word
absolutely.
You use. Yeah, yes. And be accountable. Like, if I'm really going to put that stereotype in, I better know why I'm doing it, as opposed to maybe I can easily change it up to something.
And it's better. I never would say, like, to perpetuate a stereotype is justifiable. But, you know, if you recognize your intent, you know, like we talked about, and your purpose behind that, and to be responsible and accountable towards that is huge, right?
Are all stereotypes bad?
Yes, I would say. You know, okay. Everyone says a mono-minority stereotype is great because everyone thinks that you're smart, right? But there are a lot of implications and consequences that come with, quote-unquote, a positive stereotype, right? That means a lack of resources for me. That means if I ask for help, I'm automatically seen as, oh, what, you're Asian? You don't know? You know, kind of thing. That means, like, teachers won't offer special, or not special attention, but attention towards me because I'm assumed to get it, right? And oftentimes, I might not even learn anything because I don't get what's going on, but I'm scared to ask for help because I'm perceived as X, Y, and Z, right? So I would say stereotypes are damaging, even if they're perceived and constructed as something positive. Right?
So this was the discussion I wanted to have with Karate in the Room, because he has a much better narrative and a film background, which is when you are creating something, some form of entertainment, whether it's film or video game, there's only so much information you can give about the character, and especially if they're a very minor character that they're only going to be seen for a minute or two, you can't spend, you know, years or days or years you know, constructing that and going, okay, now I've messaged exactly what I want with this, or else you'd never finish with the project. Uh-huh. And so how do you reconcile this? I don't want to do stereotypes, but I still have to characterize these entities that
so,
are
but then
that
my
are
question would be like, why do you think it's justifiable? You say, like, well, I have these characters, and these characters are, I'm privileging these characters, but then I'm not giving much weight to stereotypes, you know? Like, I would question that. Yeah,
okay.
Sorry.
Well, actually, about that, like, recently, like, a lot of companies have actually started to put more, like, more attention to their characters. For example, Assassin's Creed 3.
Yeah.
When they created, what's his name again?
Connor.
Connor. When they created Connor, like, they were, like, they actually started down the line of, like, a very typical, like, stereotypical Indian.
Yeah.
But then they actually hired, like, a full-time professor from a local university that was knowledgeable in the culture of the Mohawk tribe that they were trying to represent in the game.
Uh-huh.
And any time they had a question, they actually would just, like, call him. And he made them change a bunch of stuff on the game.
Awesome.
Because they're like, because at one point, I remember reading an article that they were going to display some form of, like, it was important to the religion of the tribe, and that was seen as, that would be seen as offensive. So the professor told him, no, you have to take that out. You can't do that.
Hmm.
And so a lot of the stuff that went into Connor, into creating that person, was a lot of work.
Okay.
And they did their best to actually not just, like, stereotype that guy.
Yeah. And I think that that's great. You know, I encourage them, like, when you are creating a game, if you have a big enough budget, hopefully you do, or even someone that would volunteer, to be able to consult you in this process in terms of, you know, race or gender or whatever. And I think that that's really important to have, quote-unquote, an expert to support you through that process. You know, that can mean huge, right? Me playing a video game and be like, no, fuck this. This is stupid. Like, I'm portrayed in this way. Or me playing it and actually saying, you know, oh, shit, I identify with this character.
Yeah.
Right.
Karate, did you want to respond to that question?
Well, no, as far as, like, characterization. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. When I do my writing, I don't usually go by stereotypes. I don't like that kind of stuff.
But then that's the thing, it's often subconscious.
Right? That's true, of course. Yeah.
Because you could be walking by someone and be like, grab your purse a little tighter because they might have darker skin. Right. So it's subconscious. You might not even realize it.
I don't carry my purse very often. Oh, well, I'm just kidding. No, I get you right.
A long time ago.
I have a man bag. It's a man bag. A merce.
I do understand what you're saying as far as like, because you know, whenever you watch a movie, you want to watch anything. What do you see?
Ashley's back.
I sort of got kicked out.
Oh. You got kicked out of class.
Not really, but I could leave. It's all right.
Oh, okay. Oh, good.
Well, thanks for coming back.
Like, you know, when you see an image of a character, especially in a video game and anything, you want to be able to identify everything about that character from one frame.
Uh-huh.
And that's... Sometimes you can use stereotypes well. Not necessarily racial stereotypes or anything like that, but like someone with glasses, obviously... considered smarter than someone who isn't, or considered more gentle. You know, someone who is tall is considered more powerful, mm-hmm. more domineering than someone who isn't. You know, and so like those kind of things, looking at a character, they're useful tools, but I don't think I've never considered using race as a motivating factor for those. Tools. Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course.
And I don't mean to, when I say stereotypes, I'm not talking race or gender stereotypes.
But then they're all interrelated, too. Right, okay. Yeah, okay. So you know they intersect.
Yeah. Yeah,
they're not mutually.
Because I mean, like, I can read a description, a paragraph description of a character, and he says, this person walks this way, and he does this as he walks by this, and I don't know his race, I don't know his gender, but I get a really strong sense of all these little details about him. I go, oh, okay, this is this kind of person, right? Yeah. Like, that is that...
But then that's still, you're what still constructing a type of person, right? You could be like, she walks in a certain way, and she wears red lipstick, and her boob size is 34B. Shit, she's hot.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Right? Automatically, you're still constructing, like, you could say this person walks really fiercely, right? And then has a low voice or a strong voice and is overweight. Mm-hmm. You could think... He's X, Y, and Z, or whatever racial attachment. Yeah. So you're still, in many ways, while you're not constructing the character based on stereotypes, you still are, in terms of identifying it, still identifying it based on stereotypes.
And so based on my privilege or wherever my station is, whether I'm consciously or subconsciously, I'm constructing stereotypes. Is that right?
You are being influenced by them.
Okay.
Right? So there is a sense of buy-in. In many ways,
where okay.
be conscious or
something. And so,
that's why I'm saying, like, you know, if you say someone with glasses is seen as more gentle, or could you give them a different feature and describe them as gentle, right? Is that going to, like, be the end of your game?
I don't know.
Yeah,
that's the question, right?
Disrupt it a little bit. Like, if the hot girl have, right, because typically, like, beauty is seen as lighter skin. Could the hot girl in the game be darker, right? Could her eye color be a little bit darker? Or could she have curves, mm-hmm. right? Could she look a little bit different than what we maybe traditionally, quote-unquote, think, right?
Yeah.
And that's what I'm encouraging, you know? And I'm not saying... to compromise your creativity by any means, but at the same time, you have to be conscious and respectful of what does constructing a character entail and what are the implications and consequences in that when a youth is playing the game. If you see someone, you know, in the game, the violent person has dark skin and is shooting up everybody, like, that's going to be, especially if you're in, like, a middle-class environment where you don't really interact with many people of color, like, that could be your only interaction mm-hmm. with a person of color. And on Mac, when you go to the store and think, is that a violent person? Am I in trouble? Right? Like, my best friend works in Albany, and he works at this expensive shoe store. He's a manager. And, you know, this young girl, and it's in this upper-class neighborhood, and this young girl sees this black man, right? My manager is, my best friend is black, as well as one of his assistant manager. And the young girl, this white girl, goes, what's that? Points to the black man and says, what's that? Right? And the mom gets all flustered and shit, like,
A child.
Yeah, a child. Yeah, like, okay. Like, four.
An 18-year-old woman?
No. Like, she's, like, four. And she's like, okay. Mom, what's that? Points right to the man.
Yeah.
Right? The black man. And the mom's like, oh, honey, what do you mean? Like, she's acting like she doesn't know. And the girl looks at him and is like, what's that? Right? And that's showing, like, she has had limited to no interaction with people outside of, you know, who she is and what she is, right? Mm-hmm. Outside of her family stuff. And then so if she's playing, she could have gotten that from a video game or from an app or something and then applied it into these real world spaces, right? And then the mom is also at fault because the mom was like, I don't know. But like, yeah, like, why don't you just say what it is?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Why don't you just respond and use it as a teaching moment? Like, honey, that is a beautiful black man standing there. Like, What's the issue with that, right? But people get all weirded out about race and stuff. And that's why it's always this uncomfortable ass conversation.
I have a 7-year-old, 3-year-old, and 1-year-old, and the 3-year-old is quite vocal about like, oh, look at that, you know, and she'll stare at someone that's maybe handicapped and is using some sort of crutches or wheelchair, and I go, what are you looking at? Uh-huh. You know, and I say, isn't that interesting? He's different than us, isn't he? You know, and say, oh, that's, you know, so he's maybe injured or something happened, and so he's a little different, and that's okay.
And it's not even necessarily saying he's different, because then you're positioning us.
Well, no, and I'm sorry, and I don't mean to say, but it's just like,
saying, like, there's many people
and
in
I just go,
the world, right?
We're different. You know, everyone, some people have, she's like, well, how come her hair color is black? I'm like, her parents had black hair color. I don't know. Genetics, do you want me to teach you about that? Or just say, some people have different hair color than you, and that's totally cool.
We have to be open to that dialogue, but also open into, if we are responsible in terms of, like, I mean, I'm responsible for my curriculum, right? For you guys, you're responsible for video games. So I'm responsible for what that looks like. Right?
Yeah.
If I know that that's my responsibility, then I'm going to give it my best shot. And so, like I told you yesterday, like, my curriculum has a lot of women of color literature in there because I know historically and traditionally we're marginalized from that, where our literature is not seen as valuable, not seen as academic. So I'm going to put that in there and try to legitimize these narratives and these voices and these experiences as academic.
Well, and didn't you say that even within the gender studies, they're still discussing white...
And within gender... Like, yeah, the canons,
white canons as opposed to...
Yeah, like, canons are still... by white authors, right? Yeah. And so I'm like, well, my canons don't look like that. My canons look different.
Yeah.
And also within gender studies, like, it's, one, an underfunded program on this campus. It's not privileged in many ways. Like, it's seen as, like, oh, these liberal arts stuff, right? But, and so in terms of, like, who they can hire is limited, but, like, you know, me and then my friend Ricky as well are the only people of color in the program, right? And so we know that there's a responsibility to put in something different, to make it look different, right? And whatever that means to us and why we think that that's important, right? So it's not something that's additive, it's something that's foundational to our curriculum. And it's the same thing in terms of developing a video game, right? It's not something, okay, well, I only have white people there, so let me just throw in this Asian kid, right? It's not like that, right? But there's intent and purpose behind it. Why does he belong in this story, and why do you hope to have him in there? And what kind of message does he display or portray? You know, it's the same in many ways.
So, and I'm going to ask this question, which I asked you last time, and I resoundingly hope that we can answer this better, which is, do you get opportunities to consult on any sort of media? You know, do you get opportunities that people call you up and say, hey, we're trying to portray this and this and this, and we want to make sure that, you know, we're not going to, you know, say anything or do anything offensive with that media?
I don't now. I think maybe because I'm not yet a graduate.
But, so, well, even in your program, do you have other people or your department?
In my program, we're all kind of crusty academics.
Oh, no!
You know what I mean? Like, many of us are practicing, so we both theorize, you know, we sit, we write, we research, but we also go into the community and really apply, you know, what it is that we learn. So, but then a lot of people are being trained to be researchers.
Okay.
So they... you know, read and write all day long because that's expected of us, right? So, do we get those opportunities? We get opportunities to present at conferences, but, right, we're presenting to other academics.
Yeah.
Right? We get opportunities to guest lecture, but we're guest lecturing to, you know, an educated class, right? So, no, we don't get that opportunity. I don't know if many people would be open to it.
And honestly, like, now... I feel like I need to be, you know, one of the ways that I'm seeing myself as responsible is like, oh my gosh, I need to call you guys up more often. You know, if I'm actually addressing an issue, you know, and it's so cool. I never knew that about Assassin's Creed 3 that they made sure to have this professional, you know, on call. It's like, hey, just want to clear some things with you. And he probably saved them a huge PR show, but also he was able to help them define this character as who he really wants to be, as opposed to just reinforcing stereotypes.
Yeah, I think that that's great. Now, I mean, to recognize, like, if you called me up and asked, like, how can I represent a Vietnamese American? And I'm not going to say that what I encourage you is essentialized. Like, that doesn't mean that it's essential to each Vietnamese person. But it is, in many ways, we're hoping for more accurate description rather than a stereotypical description, right? And so that's what it is. So we have to be important to recognize, or I'm encouraging you all to recognize that it's not, like, essential to each and every person.
Well, that, like, so my dad was soil sciences, so completely different field, but he was a professor for 20-odd years, and he later went on to create a private company based on the fact that so many people in the industry kept consulting with them. And they were just like, we want to make sure we get this right, and you guys in academia know this stuff, right? And I've asked a couple people in the industry, and I'm like, do you guys ever turn to, you know, the universities for help? And they go, what are they going to do for us? You know, and you kind of shake your head at them, but it seems like more than ever we have opportunities, and we should be coming to you. You know,
absolutely. So. And you know, our schooling system is changing, right? It's not just the majority white students anymore, right? Their immigration is changing the face of what education looks like, about what industries look like, and so this becomes even more essential in terms of this changing demographic, right? This evolving society. So, I mean, I would much rather do this than read and write all day. So, you know, I mean, this is a great opportunity for me as it is for you guys. You know? So, I mean, this is something I don't mind doing at all. Does that mean everybody's like that? I don't know.
Yeah. Right? Well, I mean, but at the same time, someone suggested that he's like, well, why don't you go talk to someone in gender studies and realize that you don't know what the crap you're talking about. And I sent an email off, and you got none, you know, 3 out of 4 people didn't respond, but you did, you know, it never would have happened if I didn't send an email.
Absolutely.
So at the same time, it really wasn't that hard for us to get together.
For sure.
It really wasn't that hard for me to go, I need some help. And you're like, okay,
you know, and for me, I'm the type of person who's like one, I recognize I'm probably overcommitted to certain things. Like I'm very busy, but I'm never too busy when I know that there's a purpose behind it. Right. And I tell my students, like, I could be the busiest person, but I'll always make time for you.
Yeah.
You should always know that. And that's no different in this situation. Like, if you wanted to hit me up for whatever reason, like, I'll always respond to your email.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think that that's important. And important in terms of, like, what you do is not even much different than me. Like, you develop a game, I develop curriculum, right?
Yeah,
it's not
yeah.
even any different, but yet we think, like, oh, we have these two different, you know, academics or whatever, and that's really not the case.
Yeah. Cool. Well, do you have anything else you want to say? Anything that we missed that you want to cover? Because I think we got to wrap up.
No, I mean, I really want a picture from someone out here, like, taking it in here.
It's just an audio booth. I've seen this.
I'm reading the writing all day.
Yeah. I realize it because I'm like, I've seen this stupid booth so many times.
Exactly, and it's nothing to you, but for me, it's like,
yes, for you, it's the first time. So I guess it is. We'll take care of that. And we've got plenty of paraphernalia out there that we can take pictures of from video games if you want.
Well, do you guys have any other questions for me?
No, I'm.
No, I mean. Let me keep talking, but actually you're going to run out of time.
Yeah, so. Word. No, I appreciate it.
Thank you. Ashley, did you want any final thoughts?
My random contribution.
I come in and I come out, and you got to say something.
I don't.
All right.
Heyo.
My friends are wondering, can I get a link to this? So that
absolutely.
Sure.
Yes.
We'll give you the link to our site.
And we'll put a link to your contact information so any of our game dev friends can contact you.
I would love that.
Her contract prices are a little horrendous, but I'm sure she can work with you. So.
Low triple digits per hour.
Nine is not low. No, just kidding. but thank you, Cindy Nguyen, for coming on. And we're super excited to have this conversation. And I feel empowered. I feel excited and feel like I want to do something, you know, better than what I've done before. And I think...
That's great.
Good. Yeah. Okay.
And if you want to read on white privilege, let me send you some stuff there.
That would be great.
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
Shoot us a couple of things.
We always have a huge list of links of things that we talked about in the podcast. So if you can give us some more content,
absolutely.
More the merrier. We'd love to. And personally, yes, I would love to learn more as I can. So
for sure. I'll send you some seminal pieces.
Nice. What's a seminal piece?
Piece where it's like, oh, this is where an origin, I guess you could say.
Oh, okay.
Like, Peggy McIntosh wrote about white privilege, and then everyone started talking about white privilege.
Oh, I see.
Or became, like, more interested.
This is the one that kind of springboarded discussions.
Exactly.
Oh, neat. Good. Okay. Well, so we're going to wrap this up. Thanks for listening, Confessions of a Game Dev. You can contact us at the following locations. Ashley, do you want to give it a go?
At Game Dev Confess for Twitter.
Yeah.
Twitter.
And Facebook.com/Christian.
I have no idea.
Game Dev Confess.
There you go.
Facebook. By email. I like you guys.
Yeah.
GameDevConfess@gmail.com.
Yeah. Yeah. And
our website.
And our website. What's our website, Cindy?
GameDevConfess.com.
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
Yes. Oh, nailed it. I'm sorry. I curse a lot. I'm sorry.
Yeah, this is totally going to be like an explicit conversation.
Yeah, we have to mark that on iTunes.
Do you have to bleep it out?
No.
Well, either I bleep it out or I actually have to mention that this is explicit because we do publish
on
iTunes.
Oh, it's on iTunes, too?
Yeah. It's everywhere. Come on. All eight of our listeners every week, but it's there. Trust me.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So, well, thanks for tuning in. Thank you, Cindy, again for coming and rapping with us. And have a good day.
Bye.
Bye.